Hi, welcome to Navel Gazing on valleyindy.org and 103.5 WNHH, New Haven's community radio station. Today's episode is brought to you by Valley Gives Back, a new initiative of the Valley Community Foundation. Adding a charity to your estate plan creates a legacy that tells future generations what causes matter to you during your life. Your action inspires others to follow your lead and to make a difference. With a planned gift, you have the power to impact your community forever without affecting your current lifestyle. For more information, visit valleygivesback.org. The Valley Gives Back is an initiative of the Valley Community Foundation, connecting private philanthropy to the long-term public good of the Valley. Plan now, give later, impact tomorrow. valleygivesback.org.
The news. For energy info, we gave you the clues. Owners' profits were always sky high. Change in market now threatens our lives. Post-literation, critical reading, dumbed down nation, signs of inbreeding. TV sucking ideas from our head. Discourse just about dead. We'll ride the dinosaur. Yeah, ride the dinosaur.
Hey, I'm Eugene Driscoll. Welcome to Navel Gazing, the Valley Indies podcast. Today I have two special guests from the city of Derby. Assistant Derby Fire Chief. I know that because it says it on his shirt. David Leonard. Hello, David.
Good morning. Or afternoon. Where are we at?
Afternoon.
Afternoon.
So this is, I don't know how many times you've been on this podcast. You've been on a couple of times.
Yeah, this is actually my hat trick, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that's the third one.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
And then also joining me is Seymour Deputy Fire Marshal Tim Willis, also making a return appearance.
Yes, this too would be my hat trick. This is number three.
Oh, you guys are...
Yeah, we should get a pin or something.
There's got to be something.
Yeah, like a medal.
One of you contacted me, I think.
I think
you sent me an email just saying we want to come on your podcast and talk about fire safety, I guess it was. Now, is this October, right?
Technically, it's next week, so we're getting ahead here.
Oh, well, that helps me. I'll probably post this about November,
yeah.
So let's just...
Sounds about right, yeah. No, it's always the week of October 7th and 8th.
Yes.
And before we sat down or the microphones went on, Dave, you said that this is before and after. You're the before guy.
Oh, no, he would be the
Timmy's
would
be the before.
Yeah. Oh boy,
Timmy's a fire marshal, so their job is prevention.
Okay,
and we're the fire suppression, so we're the after it happens.
Does that mean I'm the after? Yeah, if I investigate it?
You're actually in the middle. I'm in the middle of a Timmy sandwich.
That's where I want to be. Yeah, because you come in. I thought you meant because he comes in at the end and
He comes in at the beginning, does his prevention.
Hopefully, stop it from happening.
Yes, and then if it happens, we handle it. And then after it's out, he figures it out
when they're done and ready to go home.
So I often think about burning to death in a fire because the way my house is, right? I live on Hawthorne Avenue in a half a story. What is it? One and a half a story cape. You know, the house was built in 1960. Everything's original in it, pretty much, which you can probably say for a lot of houses in the valley. It's an old housing stock, and the bedrooms are. There's one like my house is only. It's only one and a half stories, but because it's on a hill. When you're in my backyard, it's like 10 stories high. You know, it's really high. And of course, that's where my kid sleeps, right on that highest point of the house. And for him to get out, you know, I don't have a ladder. But I think about these things. So I remember as a kid, you know, the fire marshal or maybe, I don't know who they were, would come into the school and do stop, drop, and roll and all that kind of stuff. And they always talked about having a ladder. And I have none of that. So I don't know. What did you guys want to talk about to get this fire prevention, fire safety conversation started?
I was going to just real quick give you the history of why we're here, where we're here, where we're at. So, and I think Tim will enjoy and agree with me, but basically we're here because of a cow. The Fire Prevention Week is centered, like Timmy said, around October 8th, 9th time frame every year, and that's to commemorate when the Great Chicago Fire happened in 1871. And as we all know, legend has it that Mrs. O'Leary's cow knocked over a lantern in the barn, leading to a couple-day conflagration.
For the record, the cow did receive a presidential pardon.
It's true.
Receive a pardon. So the story about the cow starting a fire, I don't know about that.
Yeah. But according to legend, like I said, it That's why we're here. So in 1920, President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed a Fire Prevention Day, which turned into Fire Prevention Week a few years later. And at the time in 1920, about 15,000 Americans died every year in fires. And it cost the country about $230 million. Translated in today's dollars, it's about $2.7 billion in damage.
Wow.
So, you know, they determined that there was a need for fire safety awareness in the country. And that's so that's kind of, you know, why we're here. So I emailed you, suggested this. I knew Timmy and I have faces for radio, so we figured this was probably the best way to go about it. So
yeah, and pretty much, I mean, I was telling Ethan, you know, if one of you guys calls, we have no choice, really. We got to let you guys on.
Because you're stuck, because you're going to need us later on.
You're always you guys are always open, and so we're happy to have you. So are there any fire prevention events happening? Like, Tim, what is this month like for you? I assume you go to the schools.
We do. Actually, starting next Tuesday, we're going to be in all our schools in town, both our grammar schools as well as all of our daycares we're going to be going into. We're going to be talking with the kids. I look forward to it. I know the men and women of the fire department look forward to it because they get the opportunity at that point to go and, you know, see the little ones in impart a message. I always look forward to the day after I go into the schools because I always get the friends that are either siblings or parents giving me the call saying, hey, firefighter Tim made me stop, drop, and roll tonight. And I get those stories from all the children or from the parents of the children. So I know that something is getting through to them. And it really is important because one of the problems with this country, and it's not this area or anywhere in particular, we give you a lot of fire prevention education when you're a kid. You're in a daycare or you're in public school, you get it. And then after like the third grade, we kind of forget about you until you're into a senior home, you know, at whatever age that is. There's this huge gap in between. And I saw it my previous job. I won't name the university, but I used to work as a fire safety officer at one of the universities in Connecticut. And I would work with the students and I'd ask them, you know, what happens if you have a fire in your oven? And I would get people, these are college educated, raising their hands saying, well, I don't know. Or you know, who do I call? When do I wait? How do I use a fire extinguisher? These are things that, you know, we kind of neglect, but until that time comes, you don't know if you know.
And can we talk about the Valley specifically for a second? I'm wondering, is there anything, I mean, I know, Dave, you're a career firefighter in Bridgeport, if I can say that.
We'll find out if you could.
A little late now, I mean. Yeah.
Is there anything, I mean, I've heard there are some things that are unique to the Valley in terms of fires and fighting fires in the Valley. What are the characteristics from a fire marshal and a firefighter's perspective concerning the Valley? Whoever wants to get
I'm going to jump Tim. In on this one. One of the things about the Valley, the Naugatuck River Valley, we're an old mill towns. We started out with lots of industry based in big mills sitting on the river. So we needed people to work at these places. So we had these giant colonials in the area that were slowly converted into multifamily homes for the workers. So you'll hear David or I talk about three woods, you know, three-story wood frame houses that are typically, you know, two apartments each floor. We kind of have an idea going into these things. Not that they're unique to this area in general, but a lot of our surrounding areas are basic suburban ranches, raised ranches, where the communities right along here, Seymour, Ansonia, Derby, Shelton, we do have an abundance of these in the downtown areas. And they're safe. I mean, we're doing inspections. I can speak for my office.
Because those are the ones that the fire marshals, like you don't check out a single family.
Three family and up we're going into. And I can say that even for the other communities around. We're getting in and we're doing these inspections. But at the end of the day, they're tightly packed together. You may have 10 feet between your house and the neighbor's house. So if you do get a fire in one, you know, you have one extended. I was at a fire not too long ago helping
out. In Ansonia,
out,
right?
Right, yeah, over off, here in Ansonia.
Off North Main Street.
Absolutely. You know, not too far from where we sit. And you had a fire in one, and next thing you know, it jumps to the next one. These are some of the factors that we deal with, you know, unfortunately, maybe not every day, but probably weekly in the Valley.
Yeah, definitely. You know, again, we're older communities. You look at the Northeast down to like, you know, Washington, D.C., out to Chicago, the older part of the country. We deal with these wood frame buildings that are close together, you know, very frequently. If you move down south, out west, you see that kind of go away. So for us, it's a different style of firefighting. And we, you know, we've adapted to it. But I don't think there's any one problem that we could point to as a major source of fires in the Valley. You know, I can't say there's anything that's been a rash. I will say one thing that's probably made a comeback in our lifetimes, Tim, is candles.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, a lot of people obviously stopped using candles. You know, you're worried about it when a power outage happened. But now with Yankee Candle and Bed Bath & Beyond and all the fragrant candles, candles and incense are burning all the time. So I think if anything's kind of emerged, it's definitely a candle-caused fires are more frequent than they used to be 10, 20 years ago.
I was wondering, just thinking of my own setup in my house. I've got Nintendo Switch. I'm gonna get my house burglarized when this.
Keep going. Yeah.
Go on.
I've got all kinds of stuff plugged into my walls.
Correct.
And I've got an extension cord to an AC. I'll probably lose my insurance now too. But
you say, Ethan.
I'm Ethan Fry. I live in Shelton. I forgot. Do you see any increase in people overloading outdated or older electrical systems in the homes at all?
I mean, electrical's always been there, and it's always been a problem. The extension cords, Tim and I both, they're kind of, we don't like them. They're kind of a cause of a lot of fires, especially when people take them and they get a 20-foot extension cord and they plug it in and they coil it up in a pile. And then they put stuff on top of it, and all
that all gets hot.
Getting hot and getting hotter.
You get what's called resistance heating, and not to bore the listeners, but what you see, and it's a pet peeve of mine, well, it's convenient. I put it underneath the rug, so it's not a trip hazard. Well, it's not a trip hazard, but you may fall on that when it's burning, when your house catches on fire. So you want to avoid that. I've seen them run through mattresses. On an inspection not too long ago, I actually came across a set of Christmas lights being used as an extension cord. I mean, it's got a plug on one end and you can go into the wall on the other. It must be fine. The big problem is with electrical is people using things for their not for their intended uses. I mean, an extension cord really should be used and then unplugged when you're done using it. It shouldn't be in, say, if you had an air conditioner, that would not be something you would want to have it plugged into.
Because you shouldn't be using it more than, it's a temporary thing.
It's temporary, absolutely.
I'll be right back.
All right.
So what about, let me just say, go ahead, go ahead. Don't let me dictate the conversation.
I think probably, too, the biggest thing that, if Tim and I are here to sell anything today, and we know it, it's smoke detectors. Smoke detectors save lives. It's plain and simple. Can't stress that enough. You should have operating smoke alarms in your house, outside the bedrooms, one on each floor, top of your basement stairs. The more you have, the better. And nowadays, too, you could pretty much get smoke alarms. They're relatively inexpensive. If cost is a problem, contact your local fire department. A lot of them have programs where they give them away. It's an important tool. It buys you time in a fire. It buys you minutes. And those minutes are what you need to get out.
It's so imperative that you have smoke alarms. I mean, my house, well, I probably shouldn't say the square footage in case our assessor is actually listening to finish square footage, but it's some.
This is a hugely popular podcast with assessors. That's a demographic we.
You're shooting for the tax assessors. Yeah. Well, my house is X amount of square feet, but it's not very large. I actually have 14 smoke alarms in my house. I know my fiance goes crazy because I do fire drills. She works nights, so sometimes if I come home from lunch or whatnot, she's never too key on that in the middle of the day when I'm deciding to run a fire drill during the day. But I mean, you do have to do it. It keeps us safe. You don't want to just do that in school.
I'm picturing you. Do you get dressed up in it? Do you wear anything special when you do?
Sometimes an orange jumpsuit on the fire, so you have to pick another way.
I'm picturing you with that. Remember the
Big Bang. Sheldon runs the emergency drills in the apartment.
I was thinking the honeymooners where Ralph would wear that coonskin cap thing. Yeah, that's fascinating. So what about? I know when I bought my house, when I was buying smoke detectors in the first 3 months when I was paying attention to this stuff, I was amazed by, you can get a smoke detector that's also carbon monoxide that'll set off your other alarm, and they're all connected through the internet, and this one will, bake you a cake. Is there any particular that you recommend?
I would go with anything that has a cake option.
Yeah. If it's making you food, how do you say no to that?
Hi, this is Eugene, most likely interrupting myself to bring you a message from our sponsor. What will you be remembered for? Adding a charity to your estate plan creates a legacy that tells future generations what causes matter to you during your life. Learn more at valleygivesback.org. It's an initiative of the Valley Community Foundation. Plan now, give later, and impact tomorrow at valleygivesback.org. Now back to the show.
That being said,
I might have been ripped off.
The combination units are good. The one negative is, and it was the big push for Fire Prevention Week last year, smoke alarms are good for 10 years. At the end of the 10-year cycle, they lose their sensitivity. Approximately 50% don't function properly after 10 years. So a smoke alarm, 10 years is the magic window. Get rid of it. Get a new one. The problem is carbon monoxide alarms right now. It's typically about a 7-year window, depending on the manufacturer. So if you're getting that dual unit, you're actually buying a product that's not going to be worth its weight the entire time, because at the 7-year, the carbon monoxide feature is not going to function. And a pet peeve of mine, and I've already said it incorrectly, we're talking about smoke alarms. That's the big thing. We kind of use smoke alarm and smoke detector synonymously. They're not. Smoke detectors tied into a fire alarm system, something with pull stations. You'll see at the movie theater or out if you're getting an adult beverage in a local restaurant, you're going to see a smoke detector. In your house, we're talking about smoke alarms. They could be tied together. The big difference is the smoke alarm smells it and lets you know. The smoke detector just smells it and sends a signal back to the panel and says, hey, you should tell people somehow. And that's why we have the horns and the strobes in places. So, but I'm just as guilty. I know we've both done it already wrong. But.
Nice job, guys.
Sorry. So we've given you the wrong. So for the past 15 minutes, we've given you the wrong
completely wrong information.
Oh, yeah,
man. So. What about when I cover the city of Danbury, another city in Connecticut, right? They had this issue in their multifamily houses where basically, and actually this was in Mount Kisco, New York, or it was always everywhere.
I probably know where you're going. I'm going to tell you it's in Derby.
Where you go into a house and it's supposed to be two family, maybe right. It's supposed to be one family, and you know you've got people in the attic, you've got partitions out of nowhere, and I've heard fire when we've gone to fires, you can hear on the scanner, or you can just sit there on the street and watch you guys respond, and you're literally running into walls where there's not supposed to be walls. How is that a problem in the valley? And I'm also wondering, and maybe Dave, because you're a former alderman, so maybe we'll get political for half a second, which I know you love. I'm always surprised it's not something we don't hear. Everywhere else I covered, illegal apartments were like a rallying cry. It was a campaign issue all the time. But anyway, how often do you run into it?
You run into it more often than you'd think, especially in the valley. The valley area, but fortunately, because of the fact that the fire marshal's offices throughout the valley are very diligent, if we run across them at a call, we immediately notify them, and they're working to rectify it. Some of the advantages in Derby, we have with the Storm Ambulance Corps doing, a lot of those guys are members of the fire department, so they're in a lot of buildings a lot on medical calls, and while they're in there, they're noticing these things, and they're reporting them back, and it becomes a very good asset. But if you think your apartment is illegal, and we've had this before where you have people that contact us and say, you know, listen, I'm renting an apartment at this address, and I don't know if it's up to code. I don't know if it's legit, you know, and we'll forward that information on to the fire marshals. And it's the right thing to do, because at the end of the day, it's your safety. It's your family's safety. If you think that there are, you know, problems with your apartment, then definitely get in touch with the professionals, and they'll come and tell you. Because Tim, you'll probably be able to be better at this than me, but there was a change in the code which allowed one exit in a apartment. Am I wrong? So far, you're looking right.
There's certain exceptions.
And one thing we're running into now is that you're getting top floor, you know, third floor apartments, top floor apartments that have one exit. And the people are saying, well, you know, hey, I rented this apartment. There's only one exit. And then you check back and you're like, actually, no, now under the code, it's legal. You're okay to be there.
How'd that happen?
There are certain times because as much as a fire code in the state of Connecticut is black and white, there is still some gray areas. The code will say something is specific, you know, they'll pound their fist. That's how it has to be. But then there's three exceptions to it. And sometimes you can meet those exceptions. So there's been many times I've gone out to do a multifamily inspection where I've walked away or I've left the owner saying, listen, this doesn't look right. We're going to have to work through this, figure out a way to solve it. And then I get back to the office and look at the code and say, well, you know what? They were actually right. They are allowed to do this. And that's why I know everything in this conversation is going to make a big circle back to smoke alarms, early recognition. I mean, fires double in size every 30 seconds. And you know what? Every single time I go to a fire, one of the crummy things I have to do is speak with the family when they've lost everything. Unfortunately, I've had to do a few where they've lost a family member. But I'm speaking with them, and and one of the first things they always say is, it traveled so fast. It got so big so quick. If you've never seen a fire, never been, we use the term in the fire service, intimate with it, when it either first starts or when it's first found, you don't realize the magnitude and the speed at which it can really grow.
And I think, too, along with, I have my notes that I prepared.
No, I appreciate that, yeah, because otherwise I'll be asking whatever randomly comes into my head.
A statistic from the NFPA, the National Fire Protection Agency, says half of home fire deaths result in fires reported between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. So half of fire deaths occur overnight, but only one in five house fires are reported during those hours. And it's obvious, you know, people are home, they're in bed, they're sleeping. And I think along with smoke alarms, probably my other pet peeve on the side of fire prevention is people shutting doors. You know, your people who
do you mean?
People who sleep with their bedroom door open. That drives me crazy. Auntie Roe, I'm talking about you.
Wait, this is fast.
Yes. You know, simply shutting a door buys you time in a fire. So at night when you go to bed and you tuck your kids in, their bedroom door should be shut. I've, you know, in my career, in both, you know, here and in my full-time job, I've gone to some horrific house fires where one apartment is practically clean because the fire door, the you know, that was shut.
And now, does it have to be, like, my door is like balsa wood. Does it have to be a fire-rated?
It's still going to buy you time. It's blocking those products of combustion from coming into your room at a much slower rate.
We refer to them as privacy doors all the time, the bathroom doors.
Right.
There's no real security there, but it's because, well, we don't want to sit on the toilet and have someone walk in on us, so we have a door there. Even those doors are going to buy you a few minutes. And time is huge. One of the big campaigns this year by the National Fire Protection Association is close before you die. And it's the door before you go to sleep. And one of their big campaigns, there's a video and everything, is, you know, there's tons of good reasons to slam a door. Why do firefighters do it? And the big thing is do it before you have that problem. Do it when you go to sleep. If, God forbid, you do have a fire, shut the doors as you're leaving, as you're getting out, if you can think of it. Because even that balsa wood door is going to stop some amount of smoke, fire, and heat.
I had no idea.
It's something that even as firefighters in the firefighting aspect, you know, if we get into a fire relatively quickly, one of the things that we'll try to do is depending on the operation, but we try to contain the fire. And even some of the things we do is we might get up to a door and shut it while we're setting up our operation. And just simply shutting the door buys you time. So it is. I know, thanks to the miracle of the interweb that we're going to talk about, we'll send you a link for some videos that are out there, because it's a public awareness campaign now about shutting your door.
And that's the one that's going on this year.
That's one of the big pushes.
The buzzword.
I had no idea. Like, I love talking to you guys, because I always, or maybe I could just be a moron. That's the other. That's the other thing. So what else you got there in your notes, Dave?
These are all just fascinating random facts that I printed out. Let's see. Escape planning. We talk about escape planning. Is it still Edith?
Edith, exit drills in the home. Yeah. We're going to talk about that with the kids next week. We're going to give them some homework to go home to their parents. So for my Seymour listeners with kids in pre-K through third, you're going to have some homework this week with your kids.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, exit drills are very important, but it says only one-third of Americans have developed and practiced a home fire escape plan.
I never have.
You know, and your escape plan can't just be running out of the building screaming. You know, you have to have some type of meat to it. We got a little bit of notes here about heating fires, portable or fixed space heaters. That includes wood stoves. We're involved in two of every five fires of home heating origin,
which is the second leading cause of fire in the United States.
Yes.
So what's the first cause? What's
cooking?
Cooking. Okay. Then it's people trying to keep warm.
Heating. Yeah.
Okay.
Electrical. Intentional smoking.
And then, you know, coming in cooking, too. Some other things to also think about with cooking, not just fire, but also burn injuries. You know, children under five account for 30% of microwave burns, and this says here in 2014. And, you know, that's another thing. We always try to teach people, if you're cooking on your stove, make sure the handles are always turned in. Make sure this way nobody can reach up, grab something, and pull it down. We know how kids are, you know, that they'll grab anything, they'll jump for anything. They'll climb up on anything.
At that university that I used to work at, I was in charge of RA training for fire safety. And one of the big things I would talk about is know the recipe. I mean, a story that I love telling people, and it's almost too good to be true, but the university I worked at, one of the dorm buildings, had a common kitchen for the entire floor. And this young lady, I believe she was either a freshman or a sophomore, met a new guy and wanted to impress him and make him dinner. So his favorite meal was a chicken cordon bleu. So she was going to make him chicken cordon bleu. Well, inside this kitchen area, it really wasn't a kitchen. It had a stovetop and a refrigerator and a microwave. Well, shouldn't have an oven. So, I mean, it says microwave oven. It's right there. It must work. So the recipe said 45 minutes at whatever temperature. Well, I'm going to put it in the microwave for 45 minutes. She effectively made a charcoal briquette. But she put this piece of chicken and ham in the microwave for 45 minutes. Know the recipe. I know that's a little bit of an extreme, but make sure you're paying attention. You know, is it an hour and a half at 350 or is it 3.5 hours slow cooked at a low temperature? Just certainly pay attention because that's a huge cause of fires. And one of the things I would, mainly speaking to the 18 to 22-year-old crowd, if you're going to indulge in activities that you probably shouldn't, drinking and such, maybe that's the time to call Domino's. Don't decide to make the pizza when you've had too much to drink.
That was going to be my next question. How often do you go to fires where it's, somebody just got drunk and fell asleep with a cigarette or something?
I can certainly speak for a fire we had in our town back in 2010. A gentleman, his wife was away for the first time after they had a little one. She took the little one. So this is his first time as a new dad home, you know, without the family. So he decides to go out with his friends, comes home 2-3 in the morning, little under the weather, decided to make fries. And he caused the fire. And the worst part is this was an apartment building. And when he left, he kicked the door open and actually snagged on a rug. So not only did we have a door open, it was open into a hallway with other apartments. And the fire department actually wound up taking some people out of the windows at that fire. And unfortunately, I mean, it was an accidental fire. There was no intent, but he was a little under the weather. So, if that's what you're going to do, good for you. But that's the time to call takeout.
Right, yeah, have something prepared in advance. Man, that guy, he must have been in the doghouse.
He certainly. And again, there was no intention.
First weekend home, he burns down his... Dave, what was that like?
Let's see, what else... where else we want to go with... another thing, too, that I think people... A couple of misconceptions that people have. First of all, the fire code and the planning that goes into, the building... They're not designed to make the buildings fireproof. What they're actually designed to do is to buy the occupants time to get out of the building. So you look around nowadays, they build a lot of these. The new construction that we're dealing with, a lot of like light frame, very large wood frame buildings. There's some in the area. I don't want to scare anybody into thinking that their building's not safe, but they're structurally sound buildings. But when a fire breaks out in them, they're not designed to prevent the fire really from they are designed to prevent the fire from spreading, but they're designed to last long enough to get everybody out.
I don't mean to cut you off. One of the most frustrating things with this is when I first, it's hard to believe I've been certified as a fire marshal now for 10 years, but when I first went through this, I had no concept that the fire code didn't care about firefighters. The fire code doesn't care about firefighters at all. It's get the people inside out. The people who go in after, it's kind of, they're on their own, It's really, truly what David said, Give the people inside enough time to get out, get everyone to their meeting place, which you practice during your exit drill, and call 911. But when we go in, we're kind of on our own accord. And these buildings, they're built, they're structurally sound, they're safe, but they're built to stand under normal situation. Mm. Not when you introduce 2,000 degrees and thousands of gallons of water in a few minutes.
You had mentioned, Dave, misconceptions.
Yes.
And one thing that, and this isn't really fire prevention per se, but, as a reporter, when we go to a fire, we're observers, essentially, and the firefighters are doing their thing. And you always, not always, the people who call in the fire are the people who live in the structure, multifamily or the apartment building. Firefighters took so long to get here. The people, I've heard that again and again. Really, it's the first firefighter, when we check it, was there within 2 minutes.
Yeah,
sometimes less. Like, is that...
It's completely normal. Even from our end, there's a few times where, I've come across an incident, and I call it in. And in my mind, I'm like, God, where are they? Like, I hear, I know that they're coming, but it's true. Under those stressful situations, you're in your mind, your passage of time increases. And you think, God, it took them. We've gone to fires, and the tenants have said, it took the fire department 10 minutes to get here. And you go back and look at the times, and they were there within 2 minutes. So that is another very popular, I'd say, misconception that. And it depends on a lot of things, too. It depends when the fire was found, how quick someone called 911. Going back to previous things, Some buildings have fire alarms, but there's nothing in the fire code that says that that fire alarm has to transmit outside the building. So we have some buildings in Derby where we actually have one senior building where there's a fire alarm in it, but it's not required to transmit out. So the fire alarm was going off. We had a kitchen fire in the building one time. And when we got there, the fire alarm has been going off for 10 minutes. You guys, we looked it up. It was right around the corner from one of the firehouses. It only took us a couple minutes to get there. But no one had called 911 because since the fire alarm was going off, everyone assumed that the fire department was coming. So that's another, if you will, misconception is that just because the fire alarm is going off, the fire department should be on their way.
So call 911.
Call 911.
Absolutely.
Yes. And the more information we get, the some of the problems we have are if a fire alarm comes in, we do not send the same response that we would to what would be a reported house fire. So if a person's fire alarm goes off and they leave the building and it's just the fire alarm, we don't send the cavalry, if you will. If someone calls 911 and says, I smell smoke in the house or I think the house is on fire, here comes the cavalry. So it's a different response for us too. So if your fire alarm's going off because your house is on fire, call 911 and let them know. That my fire alarm's going off, I think my house is on fire. It helps us because it lets us ramp up our response.
One of the situations that really helps and the Valley is volunteer firefighters. And we go to a lot of fire alarms. Probably I'd argue that 95% of our fire calls don't actually involve fire. It's probably even higher than that. So if you've had the guy that goes out, got to work in the morning, he's a volunteer, he's not getting paid to do it, and he goes out three or four times for a fire alarm in the middle of the night, that fourth call may go in and he may say, oh, it's just a fire alarm. I'm not saying it's right, but it happens everywhere in this country for volunteer firefighters. So if your fire alarm goes off and now you got a fire and you call and say, hey, there's a fire in my house, given that 911 call is huge. It's going to let us know. As Dave said, it's going to bring the cavalry at that point, but it's also going to hopefully get more volunteer firefighters out the door. So it's so, so important that you make that 911 call.
And how are the two, Dave is in Derby, Tim, you're up in Seymour. How are the departments doing in terms of volunteers? We've been around since 2009.
It's rough. You don't get the members you used to. You don't get the longevity, but you don't also have a lot of the people that work in the community. When I first joined the volunteer fire department in 1995, we had at least a dozen, if not so, very reliable guys that worked in the Valley. They worked in Derby. They worked in Surrey. They worked for the water company. They worked for the public works, where they could leave their jobs if there was a fire. And that's kind of gone. There's very few people are working close to home nowadays. It's just the way of the world.
Mm-hmm.
The other problems with volunteer firefighting is the training involved. There's no difference in standard between a career and a volunteer firefighter as far as training goes. It's the same requirements. You hit the minimum certification is the same. And right now it's
160. It kind of differs the way the program's presented. You can actually do it about as little as 145 hours. But that's still, if you're going 2 or 3 hours a week at night and maybe a Saturday or a Sunday, which you're giving up on your own time,
correct,
that's still 10, 11, 12, 13 weeks.
And do I have to,
just to be able to start?
Is that out of my pocket, or is that?
It's coming out of the city budget. It's not a cheap program. It's an expensive investment. The class alone costs about $1,100, but that's not counting the back costs too. The person needs a set of fire gear. Fire gear costs about $3,000-$4,000 per firefighter. They're going to need to get a physical. There's a lot of costs, and I budgeting for the volunteer fire services, the Derby Fire Department's budget has been cut almost 50% in the past 20 years. And the regulation that's out there, and even just the emergent in technology, and the time that Tim and I have been in the volunteer fire service, when I first joined, you still had long boots that you pulled up. You wore your long coat, a helmet, and a pair of gloves that really were terrible. Now we're in bunker gear. We have thermal imaging equipment. Our air packs are lasting as long. Our air packs transmit data back to a command post. All this technology has come, and a lot of the smaller towns haven't really been able to increase their budgets to combat that technology, if you will.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it is. It's a problem. I think valley-wide, I don't know of a Valley Fire Department that says, woohoo, we have enough money. But it's the problem with the municipality. Any city agency doesn't have enough money that they want.
What about Seymour? How are you doing in terms of volunteers?
Volunteers, one thing I will say is we are getting people to show up, which is better than a lot of other places as far as joining. However, what Dave hit on is keeping those people around, getting them to stay around. It used to be someone joined a volunteer firehouse and stayed for 25 years. Now you may get someone who decides they want to do it and 2 weeks in says, hey, this is a lot of training. I can't make that commitment. Or the other guy who does make that commitment and then 4 or 5 years later realizes I can't do this every single day for free. I'm not knocking that, but we're moving into a generation that is a very what's in it for me generation. And unfortunately, on the volunteer side, it's got to be community service and pride. You do have to have that there. I will say we can always use more volunteers. I'd love to, and I'm not speaking for my town. I'm speaking for every volunteer agency across the country, let alone the Valley. You know, show up at your local firehouse. If you see guys there, if you have an interest, we're not turning people away. I can tell you that.
And another aspect, too, there are a couple back to our misconceptions. That's what we should call this, the misconceptions of fire.
We do need some clickbaity headlines, yeah, if you could help me with
but
that.
But there's also more than just the firefighter job. You know, one of the advantages of volunteer fire departments over a career department is not everybody has to be the guy that runs into the burning building. We do have people that come and just drive the fire trucks. We have people that come and direct traffic. There are a lot of different job classifications that, you know, say like you think, wow, I can never run into a burning building. I think it's absolutely crazy. But you know what? I drive a truck for a living and I want to help out my neighborhood. So, you know, you could drive the fire truck, and that's you know, one of them.
Then you got to back those things into those ancient buildings. I'm always amazed.
Yeah, there's a lot of dings on them over the years, but still, it's something that people don't realize is there's not just, you know, not every member of the volunteer fire department is a traditional firefighter. There are many classifications.
There's lots of different tasks. You see me, unfortunately, every time we have a fire. One of my many hats that I wear is I'm the public information officer. You know, a fire department wouldn't have had that 30 years ago. A guy who one of their jobs is to come and talk. I mean, it's sometimes my biggest problem. I don't want to shut up. But that is another role.
Usually, it used to be like the guy that would come over and scream at you at these other places.
I can do that if you want the next time I see you.
Any final thoughts?
Two things. First of all, the main reason I was here last time, I plugged the calendar. I'm going to do it again, www.seymourcares.org. Get your local firefighter from Seymour with a cute dog or animal, dog or cat on there. You can get that on their website.
And that's to raise money for
the animal shelter.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you get to look at firefighters. And you know.
I bought one, but I haven't picked it up yet.
Buy another one.
That's how lazy I am. I should pay for an Uber to go get me the calendar. Yeah, that's a good thing.
And then just to leave it on, you know, I leave every interview on this, even when I'm on all these news stations and they don't want to hear it. Smoke alarms save lives. It's not just a saying. It really means it. We had a fire March or April, a four-family house, and people in the units next door were awoken by smoke alarms. If they don't have those smoke alarms, they're not walking out of there, and the outcome was much, much different. So get them in your houses if you don't have them. Give a call to your local fire department. Find out. Maybe they can help you. Maybe they can't, but they can at least steer you in the right direction.
You know, that was well said, and now I'll once again ruin this conversation and cheapen it there's something I've always wanted to ask, right? Maybe I'll edit this out, but you know, as a reporter over the years, we go to these fires and every once in a while you see it in like every single newspaper, community newspaper. The dog alerted me to the fire. The animal alerted me.
The animals do a great job.
I was going to say, I stopped believing it.
It's always dogs.
Yeah, it's always the dogs.
It's always dogs because cats are too worried about getting out.
Right.
Cats are just getting out. They're not telling you.
Yeah.
Dogs, they can't operate the doorknobs. They're letting you know. They want
to. But I know we're wrapping it up, but realize too that when it comes to nighttime and people sleeping, misconceptions, back to that. People think that if they're going to die in a house fire, what's going to kill them is the flame. And overwhelming majority of the time, it's not the flame. The flame doesn't even touch the person. It's the smoke. It's the toxic gases. And at night when you're sleeping and you're sound asleep in your bed and you think about, you know, a fire breaks out downstairs in a living room. Now the smoke and heat, they start looking, they go up. So they go up, they hit the ceiling. From the ceiling, they move up the stairs to the second floor. Then they hit the ceiling in the second floor. Now they start banking down. The smoke starts coming back down because it's filling up your house. You're sound asleep in your bed. So you're sleeping as these toxic gases are filling your house. So by the time that fire travels all the way up the stairs, burns through your closed door, you're talking 10 to 15 minutes. But that smoke's already been in your room since the beginning. So the smoke alarms are there to tell you, like, hey, smoke, 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 you know, and wake you up and to give you that chance to get out before the fire gets to you. So like Timmy said, final thoughts, smoke alarms save lives, close your doors, and that's pretty much my final thoughts.
You were so good, and then you just kind of I was trying to anticlimax.
I was getting up there, and then I was thinking about the new roller coaster in Epcot, and I was like, wrong podcast.
That's the story of my life. I lose my train of thought while I'm speaking, which makes for a great broadcaster. All right, so Tim Willis, the deputy fire marshal for the town of Seymour, thank you very much for coming on.
Always a pleasure.
Dave Leonard, assistant fire chief of the Derby Fire Department, all around great guy. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Anytime.
For hundreds of years, we brought you the news. For energy info, we gave you the clues. Owners, profits were always sky high. Changing market now threatens our lives. Critical reading, dumbed down nation, signs of inbreeding. TV sucking ideas from our head. Public discourse just about dead. We'll ride the dinosaur. Yeah, ride the dinosaur. Our readers are in the opens each day. Online clickbait, a brilliant way. It's free information here to stay. Not even hookers give it away. Advertising, metastasizing. Newsroom shrinking, constant attrition. We'll ride the dinosaur. We'll ride the dinosaur. Dinosaur. Headlines, bylines, pictures too. An editorial comment for a buck or two. Fire down the block, the murder next door. And now we wonder what it's all for. Social media coming pretty funny pages. The mayor's wages, criminal seats, corruption schemes. Ink state wretches asking tough questions. We'll ride the dinosaur. Yeah, ride the dinosaur. The presses are running all through the night. We're printing the truth with all of our might. We're platform agnostics, got that interweb too. Buy an ad, see what we can do. We'd still have subscribers, still have our fans. We're here every day, so give us a chance or we'll make an art stand. Just hold us in your hand and we'll ride the dinosaur. Yeah, ride the dinosaur. Dinosaur.